It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As the United Nations Climate Conference in Dubai, COP28, comes to a close, we examine the settlements as world leaders hash out the future of oil, gas, coal, and renewable energy. Call in with a question or comments. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Samudu Atupatu is director of the Global Legal Studies Center and a teaching professor at UW-Madison, teaching international environmental law and at COP28. Samudu, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's start as you are there wrapping up today, the end of COP28. You've been to previous UN climate change conferences. Did this one feel more urgent to you?
Yes, and it is also the biggest. So we have people from all over the world, from all walks of life, at different levels. I saw that over 100,000 people had registered for the conference. So the urgency is there, and the crowds, that was amazing to see. And there were lots of youth representatives, which I was very glad to see.
What is the message that you hear from youth as they attend COP28? What are they trying to convey to world leaders?
They are saying it's their future. Their future is not for negotiation. I heard that today and yesterday. And they're saying, you know, don't jeopardize our future.
Don't jeopardize our future. Now, there is contention at the conference as countries, dozens of countries, push for a timeline to eliminate fossil fuels. But we're hearing how oil-producing countries oppose the language that was dropped yesterday from a draft resolution. You know, what is the situation as diplomats have been working overnight to draft a new final agreement? What can you tell us there?
Everybody is waiting. The whole day we have been waiting to see the new draft. We saw that it will come out in a couple of hours, maybe. We are not sure. So everybody is waiting to see how the new language will shape up and what will happen after that. Because as you pointed out, the world's phasing out fossil fuels. The words were taken out. So reducing consumption and production has been included. And I must point out that this is the first time that there's even a reference to fossil fuels. So from that point of view, it's a step forward. But a lot of people, activists and youth wanted phasing out included in the draft. So unfortunately, that's not there yet, but we are hopeful that something more productive will be included in the draft, but everybody is waiting right now.
Samudu, how does precise language matter in this moment? You mentioned words like phase out versus phase down of fossil fuels. What is in the language?
Words are important, right? Mm. Particularly for lawyers, words are really important. But I must point out that the document itself is not a treaty. It's a decision of a conference of parties. But it's also useful in the hands of, you know, NGOs, activists, and policymakers, you know, and voters, I should say. We can hold our policymakers accountable for living up to the words that they accepted at this conference. So I think that commitment to the phasing out of fossil fuels, which caused the problem in the first place, is important.
Samudu Atupatu is director of the Global Legal Studies Center, a teaching professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, joining us from Dubai, where the UN Conference on Climate Change is set to wrap up. You can join in questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234. Samudu, the conference pledged to commit $83 billion for various efforts to fight climate change. Do you think our activists happy with this amount? Are they pleased?
No. Mm-hmm. I just came out of a press conference that was basically about U.S. obligations. And they were saying, throughout the day, they have been saying this is not enough. In order to transition to carbon neutral economy, we need trillions of dollars, and this is just nothing compared to what's actually needed. Plus, we have small island states that are facing a very bleak future. The loss and damage mechanism that was a step forward at this COP meeting requires, again, trillions of dollars. And the pledges, which are welcome, of course, are unfortunately not enough. We really need to ratchet up the commitments that states have made. It's a good step forward, but it's not enough.
Trillions of dollars. And you mentioned the loss and damage fund, and you've advocated for richer nations to help developing countries adapt to climate change. Can you talk a little bit about what this fund will enable?
Sure. So there are losses that will be irreparable. So like moving some people from, these small island states, from low-lying areas, so that, their lives won't be in danger. People are already moving, but we might have to even move countries. These small island states, as I said, with sea level rise and other severe weather events, are facing a very bleak future. They are the ground zero of climate change. So this loss and damage mechanism, which they have been advocating for since the 1990s, finally became reality at this COP. But as I said, the funding is not enough for irreparable damage as well as damage that they are facing to adapt to the consequences. So we need lots of funding, lots of assistance, resources to these communities that contributed very little to the problem. That there's a huge injustice here. Their contribution to climate change is like 1% as compared to developed countries who basically created the problem.
I want to ask you about the path forward for renewable energy and the implications here in Wisconsin, because leaders from 120 countries pledged to triple the world's renewable energy capacity by 2030. What impact could this expansion have on Wisconsin?
Every state in the U.S. will have to transition to renewable energy sooner than later. And the scientists are pointing out that the consequences are happening faster. The adverse consequences of climate change are happening faster than they predicted. So we had to go carbon neutral before 2050, which was the earlier target. So every state, including Wisconsin, will have to produce more renewable sources of energy, go for more renewable sources, and, reduce our consumption.
Samudu, I want to take a quick call here. Kevin in Janesville, go ahead.
Good morning. I am a sixth grade math and science teacher, and we are currently studying global climate change. What do my sixth graders need to be learning right now? Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Samuda, go ahead.
Sure. There are lots of things that we can do as individuals, reducing our consumption of energy, going for switching to low energy consumption or, these new light bulbs even, reducing our plastic, reducing food waste. Food waste is a big issue that's contributing to climate change. Driving less. If we can use public transportation, do that. Because I know in some areas we cannot, but try and walk more, try and cycle more. So that as individuals, there's a lot we can do. And then, changing our diet will help too. Going to a more plant-based diet will help as well.
So there are individuals, a lot of things that even sixth graders can do in their own lives to lead a healthier future for the planet. Oh, Samuda, thank you so much for joining us from Dubai.
Thank you for having me.
Samuda Attupattu is director of the Global Legal Studies Center, a teaching professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School, teaching international environmental law with a focus on climate change and human rights. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.